Well, welcome everyone. Again, welcome to the Ecclesiastes study. Tonight we're picking up where Eric finished last Wednesday night in Ecclesiastes 2. And we'll be in Ecclesiastes 2, 12 through 26. And but tonight I talked to Pastor Scott and asked him if it was okay if I taught out of the NET Bible tonight. That's a Bible that he helped me with about a year ago. So if you're in the New King James or the ESV, slightly different. I think where you'll see the major differences in terms will be the word futility and vanity. I think it will be in the NET Bible, will be profitless. I think instead of under the sun, which will be in your New King James and in your ESV, you're going to hear on the earth, on this earth. And I think that's about it. I think folly is foolishness. So very close to what you have. But for me, Ecclesiastes is a hard book to understand. And this week it's been a hard book to prepare to teach with you guys. And this translation of the Bible helped me with that this week. So if it doesn't work, do a timeout, and I'll grab, I have a ESV with me. So, but picking up from last week, Eric taught Ecclesiastes, I believe 1:11 through 2:11 last week, and he went over all the massive wealth and experiences and pleasures that Solomon gathered in his quest to find meaning or satisfaction or fulfillment. And you know, tonight we find Solomon still in that spot, searching for fulfillment, on this earth. When we look back at especially chapter 2, 1 through 10, what are some of the things that we saw that Solomon amassed as possessions or pleasures? What are some things that we saw that he gathered or earned?
Gardens, orchards.
Yep, gardens and orchards. Plural, yep. Gardens, orchards, what else? I didn't hear you.
Gold
and silver, yep. What else?
People, servants,
yep.
Wine.
Anything else?
Houses and plants.
Herds and flocks. Yep, so I went through, you guys have hit most of them. He experimented with laughter, entertainment, wine. Somebody said houses, vineyards, gardens, parks, trees, pools, slaves, flocks, gold and silver, singers, and concubines. And as he went through and amassed all that stuff, all those possessions, all those things that he gathered, and all the pleasures he experienced, when we got to verse 11, What was his conclusion or his determination at, his conclusion after that chapter in 11? What was his conclusion?
Profitless.
It was profitless. That's right. So I think back, I was thinking this week as putting this together, we don't know how many folks that Solomon had working with him or working for him, but this wasn't like a couple day. You know, he's doing this experiment, but this wasn't like a quick action. You know, if we think he built houses and pools, and I think that, you know, his trees, he even said they were flourishing, so there was some product on the trees. So that took some time to put all this together. So what a project, if you will. If we look at verse 2:10 that Eric went over last week, he says he didn't restrain himself from getting whatever he wanted. He did not deny himself from anything that would bring him pleasure. So realistically, he had access to anything and everything he wanted or desired. And that's hard to wrap your mind around. But that was how he tested pleasure, possessions, things like that in this quest, if you will, to find meaning on the earth or under the sun. So again, Eric ended last week. He considered it to all be profitless or vanity or striving after the wind on the earth. So tonight we pick up in verse 12 of chapter 2, And here we're going to focus on wisdom and work and accomplishments. And that's where Solomon goes first to try to start looking at, you know, last week, the possessions, the pleasure, that stuff didn't make me happy. I didn't find satisfaction out of it. So let's go in another direction. And in here it's wisdom that we look at tonight to see if that's how he finds satisfaction or meaning under the sun or on the earth. So keep in mind as we work through the chapter, again, the accomplishments that he had, because he's kicking back or referring back to a lot of that as he's talking about his wisdom and he's talking about his possessions and things like that and what happens to them. And he comes to that realization. I think he's looking back at those possessions and all that joy, earthly joy, and all the pleasures that he had during that time. So we'll start in verse 12, and I'm going to read it first. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 12 says, "Next, I decided to consider wisdom as well as foolish behavior and ideas. For what more can the king's successor do than what the king has already done?" So again, he returns to compare wisdom and foolish behavior as the next step in his quest for what satisfies a man under the sun or on the earth. He's testing worldly wisdom against foolish pleasures, possessions, and accomplishments. And he even says at the end of verse 12, "For what can the king's successor do?" Let me do that again. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done or what the king has already done? So, you know, it's like he's saying, who's better for this than me? Look, who's better than me to do that? The next king's not going to find something new that I haven't found in this quest. So when we talk about wisdom, I don't want to be confusing here. When it says that he's considering wisdom as well as foolish behavior and ideas, somebody tell me, you know, describe the wisdom or categorize the wisdom or define it. Is this earthly wisdom that he's looking at, or is this heavenly or godly wisdom that he's looking at in this portion of the chapter? It's earthly wisdom, that's right. So he's applying earthly wisdom. We'll get to the other type of wisdom as we get to the end of the chapter. But he's applying earthly wisdom to that of foolish behavior and ideas. So 13 and 14 says, "I, being Solomon, realize that wisdom is preferable to folly, just as light is preferable to darkness. The wise man can see where he is going, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I also realized that the same fate happens to both of them." So in his attempts to measure or compare wisdom and folly, he comes to the conclusion or makes the determination that wisdom is preferable or wisdom is better than folly. And I think that we would probably all agree with that, that wisdom is better than folly. Again, we're talking about earthly wisdom here. And he goes on to say or compare it to like light and darkness. So wisdom is preferable to folly just as light is preferable to darkness. The wise person can see where he is going. So wisdom is beneficial in that we can see, we can navigate, we could plan or whatever that looks like, but we can see what we're doing. Where on the other side, darkness is someone is blinded. They're walking around blind, stumbling around with no path or no idea what they're doing. So these two are very, very different men, different behaviors, if you will, different ideals. We have the wise men, the wise person, earthly wisdom, who can see, move around, you know, whatever that looks like. And then we've got the blind, or those who cannot see, who are in darkness, who are walking around lost, you know, unable to navigate, and so on. It's also a picture of the believer and the unbeliever, if you will, when we compare that or measure that to godly wisdom, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Of course, the wise person who is in the light is the believer following in God's wisdom, where the darkness or the blind is those that are lost. Regardless whether they are wise or foolish, regardless whether they have sight or they are blind, Solomon realizes something. And what is that at the end of verse 14, in the second half of 14? What does he realize? Say it again, John. Which is what?
Death.
So a sobering reminder that Solomon brings up here, that I can be crazy wise. I can have all this wisdom. And in a few minutes, we're going to talk about I can have all these possessions. I can have experienced all these pleasures. Again, you look back at verse 9, that of that no one else probably had access to. He held himself from nothing. But the reminder there is that the same thing or the same fate is for him as those who are blind or in darkness, the foolish, if you will. So that that realization sets the tone for verses 15 through 17. And Solomon is in despair here as he begins to think about wisdom. And is wisdom just wisdom in thought? In other words, is that just like knowledge? A lot of times we say that someone is wise and we think that that's knowledge based, that that's just what's in their brain and what they can say. When we talk about wisdom here, is that just in the brain as in knowledge, or is that hands-on not wisdom too? I agree. So I think it's intellect. And if you look back at what he did prior, there's some hands-on wisdom there as well. So I think when we look at wisdom here, it's not just the head knowledge, or it's not just intellect or brain knowledge. It's what he can do. You know, it's physical wisdom as well. All right. So again, verse 15 through 17, I'll read that, and Solomon goes into essentially some despair as he's trying to weigh in his mind that the same fate happens to him that happens to the fool. So verse 15 says, "So I thought to myself, the fate of the fool will happen even to me. Then what did I gain by becoming so excessively wise? So I lamented to myself, the benefits of wisdom are ultimately meaningless. For the wise man, like the fool, will not be remembered for very long, because in the days to come, both will already have been forgotten. Alas, the wise man dies just like the fool." And we'll pick up 17 in a few minutes. But so again, he kind of reiterates that the fate of the wise man, or his fate, is the same of that of the fool. Someone who is, again, walking around blind, walking around in darkness. And of course, you know, we see what Solomon has done. He's the opposite of the fool. He's far much more wise than that of a fool. Somebody look at chapter 1, verse 16, and kind of give me an overview of that. 1:16. What do we learn about Solomon? That's right. So, that he had become much wiser than any of his predecessors. So he was wise. He had wisdom. Do the same thing for me, someone on 2:9, chapter 2, verse 9. What else do we learn about Solomon? He has great wisdom, wiser than anyone that's ruled before him. What does verse 9 of chapter 2 say? So we see in 1:16, he's much wiser than his predecessors. We see in 2:9 that he's far greater or wealthier. You know, he has fame and fortune, if you will. And then in chapter 2, verse 10, again, we talked about that, but he didn't restrain himself from anything he wanted. So again, you know, Solomon is opposite of the fool. He is far wiser and much wealthier than all those that came before him. But his fate is the same as the foolish person who walks around in darkness. And he comes to the realization that all of his wisdom can't prevent that. All of his worldly, earthly wisdom can't prevent that. And it seems as there's tension there that, you know, wise possessions versus the fool, that perplexes him. He's thinking about that. It says in his heart. In the second part of 15, it says, Solomon asks the question, he says, "Then what did I gain by becoming so excessively wise?" So he's asking the question, through all the work, all the toil, all the labor, all that I've done, what did I actually gain from that? And again, he's comparing that to the same fate as the fool or the person who walks in darkness. The end of 15 says, so I lamented to myself. He thought to himself, he thought in his heart, the benefits of wisdom are ultimately meaningless. So he comes to the conclusion that, again, there's nothing to gain from the wisdom that I've gained here under the sun or on the earth. Again, earthly wisdom, excuse me. Verse 16 says, for the wise man, like the fool, will not be remembered for very long, because in the days to come, both will already have been forgotten. Alas, the wise man dies just like the fool. So I think here he's talking about, you know, maybe for the lack of better terms, the legacy of the fool and the legacy of the wise are the same. He says that they will not be remembered for very long, because in the days to come, both will already have been forgotten. Alas, the wise man dies just like the fool. So just like the foolish man, wisdom doesn't prevent, earthly wisdom doesn't keep your legacy rolling any more than it does of the fool. You know, and it's never been, and we'll talk about it some at the end of class, but, you know, there's, in the world we live in today, in the culture we live in today, there's such a hunger for wisdom and knowledge around our world. But often it's not the knowledge and wisdom we need to be looking for, which is found in God's Word. Often it's that of the world. And that worldly wisdom, you know, it doesn't leave lasting legacies. Whether it be for our family, for our church, for those we work with. I mean, he says it here. You know, that the wise man, like the fool, will not be remembered. And it's not the case that we won't remember someone's name or we won't remember who they were with worldly wisdom, but it's just the same as it would be with the fool. We would not maybe regard them higher. It would be something similar as we would see with the fool. Verse 17 says, so I loathed life because what happens on the earth, your Bible probably says under the sun, what happens on the earth seems awful to me. For all the benefits of wisdom are futile, like chasing the wind. And I took a snippet of a piece of commentary I'm just going to read to you. It says, given the premise of life under the sun, Solomon hated life because it was so meaningless. He categorized it as vanity or grasping after the wind. Solomon had tasted all that life had to offer, pleasure, work, pursuits of the flesh, and even human wisdom. Yet he found them to all be empty and declared all were mere vanity. He discovered the world cannot offer anything of lasting worth because everything on earth ends with death, and the same death comes on the wise man that it does on the fool. So when we flip over and start in verse 18, remember much of the accomplishments we talked about at the beginning of class were gained by wisdom from Solomon. There had to be some wisdom put into that. But Solomon, applies the same unescapable fate to the great possessions and the work that comes in the next section of the scripture. So we've looked back at wisdom, and then in verse 18 through 21, we see that applied to labor, or we see that applied to work. And when we see that word work or labor, does that just mean his physical work, his job, or is that referring to maybe possessions and things he's gathered through his work? What do you think? The effort he put into it. Good. All right, so let's read 18 and 19. So I loathed, or I hated, all the fruit of my effort for which I worked so hard on earth, because I must leave it behind in the hands of my successor. Who knows if he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will be master over all the fruit of my labor, which I worked so wisely on earth. This is also futile. So I think we can learn here that he's come to hate the fruit of his effort. The things and the effort that he's put into gaining the things that he's gained and the possessions and the pleasures that he's gained. He's come to hate that. Why does he have a hatred toward those things? Number one, he worked really hard. It says, I worked so hard on the earth. We'll see that a few times as we go down through there. It's probably going to say in your Bible, labored, or it's going to say toiled for toil. But that's an example that's showing that he worked hard or worked diligently, put forth the effort for those things. So why does he hate that, or why does he loathe the fruit of his labor? Yeah, Solomon doesn't know. He knows, again, you're right, that he's going to have to leave this behind in the hands of a successor. So somebody's going to inherit. When the same fate occurs for Solomon that occurs for the fool, somebody's going to get those possessions. And I think, like Eric said, that's uncomfortable for Solomon. As we bounce down through, 18 through 21, we're going to see him say over and over that he worked so hard, that he toiled or he labored after. And I think that's really worrying or bothering Solomon, so much to the point where he hates the possessions that are so great that probably no one else has. He's greater than anyone else, it says in chapter 2 we read. So nobody probably has that amount of possessions. I think he's having trouble with, when I die, I've got that goes to someone. And to this gentleman's point, as we get a little bit further down, someone who didn't earn that, someone who just gets that inheritance. And what an inheritance that would be, right? So anybody know the story of Rehoboam in 1 Kings? Anybody know that one?
Oh, yeah. After Solomon, the king divided.
Can I time you out? So he's the only successor, correct? He's the only son?
Jeroboam?
No, Rehoboam. He's the successor to Solomon.
Yes.
So he inherits Solomon's empire, if you will. Yeah. So when he says, who knows if he will be a wise man or a fool, it's pretty interesting that he writes that in Ecclesiastes, and then his next generation turns out to be a fool with his spoils or his kingdom.
And he had to be thinking about his son.
I wonder if he was like, this guy, this is who's getting my stuff. That's right. Or farmland. Farmland's the same way. Big tracts of farmland inherits a couple generations down, and there's no toil for that, and often it goes for sale. I've got a friend of mine. He was a very close friend of mine. He owned a business in this town, and he ran it for about 27 years. And it was a retail business that specialized in a certain product. I don't want to give it away per se, but it specialized in a certain product. And for 27 years, he ran that business with all he had. And he ended up starting a museum on the second floor. He had a collection of his products from, back to the early 1900s or late 1800s. And people from all around the world came to this spot in Statesville to see these products. He was entered into like a hall of fame for his products, for the retail line he was in. Many articles were written about him all over the world. He was seen in the top 100 of this space throughout the country. And if you said his name in Colorado in that community, they would know who that person was. And he died unexpectedly, and it's not biblical, I'm not saying that, but in the same way that we're looking at Solomon and will the heir be wise or foolish, and no, I'm not pushing this back on the family at all, but all that he had built for 30 years was gone within a year. And I'm sure as he was building his business, building his museum, building his reputation, building the articles he was in, building the Hall of Fame stuff, doing all that, he was holding on to that earthly wisdom, if you will, for it just to disappear within a year of his death. And it's kind of the same way what you're talking about with businesses and things like that. I'm sure when he was alive, he never expected that to be the course of that business. But again, earthly things, possessions, wisdom, work, They don't have any weight beyond the here and now. There's no eternal value to any of that stuff. It's not long lasting. And again, like we said, it's going to go to someone else, and we don't know how they're going to steward that. Will they be wise or foolish? In other words, will they be a good steward or will they be a poor steward? And Eric talked about Solomon's son being a poor steward. So we see those examples, and I understand Solomon's worry there. Again, as we look through those verses, we see the tension there, or the worry, I think, with Solomon as he keeps saying he worked so hard on the earth. He mentions he must leave it behind. He worked so wisely on the earth, is what it says in 19. So he talks about, you know, hating that fruit of that labor, and all that is futile, or vanity, or meaningless. So in other words, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There's not eternal, long-lasting value to that.
How long will it be after you die that your name will ever be, what's the last time it will ever be uttered on earth?
That's a good point. I think if you go back to 2:16, it talks about that wise man and fool will not be remembered for very long. But again, that's earthly wisdom. I think the fathers, the folks who steward well with godly wisdom, I think that lasts generations. That can carry for generations. So kind of like the Deuteronomy 6, you know, your sons, teaching your sons and your sons' sons with being faithful to teach that and to live in, teach, and show the example of godly wisdom versus worldly wisdom. I agree with you. I think that goes for generations. It's a good point. Sure. And the opposite of that is, you know, when our kids see us chasing the worldly wisdom, the worldly possessions, the worldly pleasures, that's harming the next generation. Or that's not building the next generation or the next godly generation or...
it's not a lasting treasure.
Yeah, it's not a lasting treasure like that. Good point. Thank you. All right, let's look at 20 and 21. So I began to despair about all the fruit of my labor. Again, we see that. For which I worked so hard on earth. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. However, he must hand over the fruit of his labor as an inheritance to someone else who did not work for it. This is also futile. And an awful injustice. So again, with the theme of these four verses, we see Solomon is despairing over the fruits of his work on earth, particularly his earthly effort and his earthly possessions. But we see the futility of it because, again, death is inevitable, and earthly possessions and achievements are fleeting. They will not last. A vapor, or like Pastor Scott talked in our first night, hebel, a vapor, something along those lines. And Solomon says he will leave it all for someone else to enjoy, someone else who did not work for it. So he has great tension with that. Somebody who didn't work for this kingdom is going to get that. And as I was studying this week, I thought, man, isn't that kind of like the way a lot of things roll? This gentleman made the point just a minute ago in inheriting with his example of a business. Those who didn't work for it get that, almost like a trust fund baby or something along those lines. But the family's passed. A snippet from John MacArthur says Solomon underscored that all these pursuits were for things found under the sun. It is a vain pursuit to chase after prosperity and power, for they are all of this world and will remain under the sun, or a part of this world, even after the one who acquired them has departed into eternity. So it's kind of the old saying, like, you can't take it with you kind of thing. Or my grandparents used to say something about a hearse and your money or something, and I can't remember. Something about
a traitor behind the earth.
Maybe so, yeah. And although that is not found in the Bible, that's kind of the same thing. You can't, you know, you can't take it with you. It's going to remain here after you have passed and departed into eternity. So verse 22 and 23 says, "What does a man acquire from all his labor and from the anxiety that accompanies his toil on earth? For all day long his work produces pain and frustration. Even at night his mind cannot relax. This is also futile." So what's the realization that he makes here? He kind of makes the realization in 22 of something. What is that?
Well, if it's kind of like me, all that worrying at night don't gain a thing.
That's right. That's right.
Except for a sleepless night.
That's right. You know, he essentially, like Jerry said, and also there's no gain. There's nothing to gain there. He says that, what does a man acquire from all of his labor and from all of the anxiety that accompanies his toil on earth? During the day, his work produces pain and frustration, and even at night, his mind cannot relax. So that kind of paints the picture of working for your possessions, and again, Solomon working for his possessions, there's anxiety that is associated with that type of labor, laboring after possessions. Like Jerry says, even at night, his mind cannot relax. All day long, his work produces pain and frustration. So I think as Solomon looks back, he's thinking, all this work I've done, and I've went through this anxiety, pain, frustration at night. I can't even rest, and all my stuff's going to go to somebody who I don't know is going to be wise or is going to be foolish. And there's anxiety attached to that. But in verse 24, 25, and 26, let me back up just a minute. I want to read one more piece of commentary associated with verse 23 about the frustration, pain, and cannot relax. The pursuit of worldly gain, of things found under the sun, on this earth, it is burdensome because we are always at risk of losing it. This burden, the pursuit of worldly gain, this burden weighs heavily on our minds to the point of making our weary souls lose sleep with worry. The more we have, the more we end up worrying about losing it. I think that's true. From my experience, it's a heavy burden when we're working and laboring for possessions, whether it's a possession we want to obtain or something that we already have and we're trying to keep it. There's that anxiety, that lost sleep, that worry. So 24, 25, and 26, we turn a corner here. So throughout the chapter, we see, again, backing way up to last week, all the possessions, all the pleasure, all the experiences. We see in tonight's text that he measured wisdom against foolishness. He realized that foolishness wisdom is better than foolishness. However, even the wise is going to experience the same fate as the fool. He understands that the wise will die just like the fool, that his possessions are futile, that they will go to someone who didn't work for it. There's no way to know if that individual that is the heir to his kingdom will be wise or foolish. So that's, you know, it seems as if for Solomon, worldly wise, there's no hope, that it's just despair and worry and a hard spot. But he kind of takes off his earthly lens in the last three verses of this chapter and starts looking at, you know, where our hope is found. He shifts his focus from relying completely on himself and his accomplishments to find happiness. So verse 24 says, "There is nothing better," and what a way to turn, like the next verse from where we just were. The next verse, "There's nothing better for people than to eat and to drink and to find enjoyment in their work." I also perceived that this ability to find enjoyment comes from God. For no one can eat and drink or experience joy apart from Him. For to the one who pleases Him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But to the sinner, He gives the task of amassing wealth, only to give it to the one who pleases God. This task is wicked. This task of the wicked is futile, like chasing the wind. So when we read this, we see a corner being turned again. Solomon goes from relying on himself and his wisdom and his possessions and those things to relying on God. The three times God is mentioned in these three verses. And if I'm not mistaken, it's the first time in this book that God's name has been mentioned as he plows through these possessions, experiences, satisfaction, pleasures, these tests he's doing, the thought of losing his life or when he dies, the thought of his possessions going away. This is the first time he mentions God. So we turn the corner and we have hope there. Solomon shifts his focus from his stuff, his ability, to the ability of the giver. So again, there is nothing better. So there's goodness in eating and drinking, and we find enjoyment there. And he says that he also perceived that this ability to find enjoyment comes from God. So instead of up to this point, what's been the source of Solomon's pursuits? Who has he been relying on for happiness and for joy and fulfillment? Himself through the world. That's right. He's been relying on that. In 24, he shifts his focus again to God. The ability to find enjoyment comes from God. I think maybe the ESV or the New King James says from the hand of God. Is that right?
Yeah.
Will you read that, whoever has?
From the hand of God.
So what does that tell us? What does that clearly tell us as far as where joy, enjoyment comes from? The source is God. All right?
Recognize where it came from.
That's right.
It goes further than that because it says everything, your possessions, your food, your provisions, your everything comes from God.
That's right. So 25 says, for no one can eat and drink or experience joy apart from him. So we find that enjoyment is possible from what Solomon's been going through. And we see that God is the source. We see that because these gifts are from God, we can delight in them. Solomon is given the source or saying, naming the source being God. But is it in that verse 25, for no one can eat or drink or experience joy apart from him, he's kind of delineating something there. I don't know if you catch it. Anybody see what he's doing there?
Recognizing sovereignty.
Yeah.
Making a separation between the sinner and the believer.
That's right. And I think he's also making the separation between the gifts and God. So we find enjoyment in the gifts from God, but the source is God. So we don't rest in just the gifts. It's God where we find that. And John and Eric are both correct. I mean, that goes to God's sovereignty and to the believer because he says that we cannot experience joy apart from him. So I think that's where John was pointing there. What does it mean? What is he saying where we can't experience joy apart from him? No one can eat and drink or experience joy apart from him. This joy comes from being with him in a relationship with him. So we are not apart from him. Once the believer experiences salvation through repentance, faith, belief, and following Christ. So we see the difference between the earthly lens that we've been measuring wisdom and possessions and work and labor through all the way to the end of the book or the chapter. But we see that through the gospel lens of God is the giver of the gifts. It's not the gifts itself that our ultimate joy. It's the relationship with God. For the one who pleases Him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. So it's kind of funny when you look back through this chapter, what's Solomon been chasing after? I think those three things, wisdom, knowledge, and joy. What's the King James say? Does it use the same terminology? Wisdom, knowledge, and joy?
It does, yes.
Okay. So it's like Solomon's been chasing that, and all the way at the end of this chapter, he determines who the source of that is. And for the one who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. He is the source. We can't find it any other way. There's no other source. We find that through salvation, repentance, faith, belief, and following Christ. But unbelievers remain blinded to this truth, like the fool we talked about up in 13 and 14 early on in the chapter. But to the sinner, he gives the task of amassing wealth, only to give it to the one who pleases God. That's kind of confusing. What does that mean? But to the sinner, he gives the task of amassing wealth, only to give it to the one who pleases God. I honestly couldn't find much commentary to assist on that one. I also wonder if it means that even though this wealth is amassed, that it will somehow, God will still use that in some way. I wonder. I really struggle with that verse. I'll be real honest with you. That's why I threw it out there. I was hoping that John or Eric or Jacob or somebody would kick in on that one. Unless we hold on to... It just reminds us who the giver of enjoyment is, and we cannot experience it apart from him.